Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Renee. Welcome to Renee's Heart to Heart. Today is Christmas Eve Day. I can only imagine how many little kids are already driving Mom and Dad crazy with, can I open just one present? Can I just see one thing? Well, your response should be to a really tiny little person, well, Santa hasn't been here yet. But I know you've been shopping, Mommy. They are so smart and they are so quick, but they also don't want to give up in the hopes of there being a Santa Claus. So many, many kids hang on to that for, gosh, I've known kids that were 12 that still believed in Santa Claus. There are times in my life when I've tried really hard to believe in Santa Claus because it's a beautiful thing. And plus that, I always hoped that he would unexpectedly show up and help me with paying for Christmas. However, I love the energy that's in the air. I love the excitement. It's a tough year for lots of people, a very, very, very tough year. There's still a lot of people without jobs. There's a lot of people losing their homes. There's a lot of stuff going on that doesn't promote any kind of celebration. However, somehow, we always fit in Christmas, no matter what's going on in the rest of our lives. We always seem to, I don't know, give ourselves a break and fall into that wonderful world of twinkling lights and mangers and angels and that big, robust, friendly man in the red suit. Why not? Why not? Life can be incredibly unkind unless you let yourself be immersed in things like Christmas. My husband asked me yesterday, what was the deal? Was Jesus born on Christmas Day? What happened on Easter? So I sat and explained everything to him, and he sat there contemplating it. The man is 70 years old, and he couldn't remember why we celebrated Christmas. So it is a celebration, and for a lot of people it's become a pagan celebration. There's a lot of mixed emotions about Santa Claus and lots of stories about Santa Claus and where he originated and all the different things that have grown over the years. Christmas is a lot different today than when I was a little girl, but then again, it's not. You waited often when I was young to put up Christmas tree, Christmas Eve. You often didn't do any present opening until Christmas morning. And of course, staying asleep on Christmas morning when you were a child was almost a complete impossibility. You'd wake up and see it was still dark out. Mom and Dad had given strict rules about what time you could get up for Christmas morning. Grandma and Grandpa were always included on Christmas Day, and of course, having been raised a Catholic, that meant we went to church on Christmas Day, and then we would all gather at my grandmother's, my paternal grandmother's. So it was, again, I have pictures of me and all my cousins sitting under Christmas trees. Are you ready for this? Smoking candy cigarettes, back when that wasn't such a faux pas, and all dressed up in our finest and having an absolute wonderful time. Favorite Christmas, I had one family. My father's brother had 8 children, and they all received a musical instrument. It was even tough for me that day listening to everybody try to play their musical instrument at Christmas time. So I hope you can conjure up some wonderful memories and think about days gone by and how joyful it made you feel to be surrounded by family and believe in Santa Claus. It's a great thing. Today we are going to talk, however, about the Bullies to Buddies workbook that I received at the seminar I went to last week. And I want to, first of all, explain to everybody how he, Izzy Kalman, describes being a victim when you are a kid in school. I'm first going to bring in Shell and say good morning to her, and then we'll work on this workbook together. Good morning, Shelley.
Good morning, Rainey.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you doing?
I'm okay. I've caught a cold thanks to about 3 different grandchildren that have all got one. So,
yeah.
Because they're very loving children, they've shared with their grandmother, you know.
Yeah, Cody and little Bay Lee had little coughs going on earlier this week, too. So, yeah, it's going around with the little kids more than the bigger kids, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, the change in the weather, I think it, yesterday it was so hot outside. It was like 87 yesterday in the middle of the day. And today it's supposed to be 70s,
It seems to be boomeranging where Cody's going to preschool. And he's gotten over it a couple of times. And then within a week or so of getting over it, he gets it back again because it just seems to circling around the class. And his mom had gone to the school the other day, and the teacher's nose is this big red honker now. So even the poor teacher finally succumbs.
She'll be pleased to know that you call her nose a big red honker, Shell.
Well, if you notice, I didn't divulge any names.
Yeah, well, that's probably a good thing, right? That's probably a good thing. I know I said to my husband this morning, I said, I've got to go put some tissues in the in my office. I keep sneezing. And he says, take a roll of paper towels. And I said, I can't. They'll make my nose. You want me to look like an Irish Rudolph or something? And
God.
And I said, they kill my nose. It'll be red as a beet. So I'm going to skip around in this workbook, but he's got it's just filled with with information that he's researched all these years. So I thought it might be a good idea because Christmas holidays are here. The kids are all home from school. Everybody's got some free time, and sometimes that's good, and sometimes that's not so good. So I thought we would talk about the fact that the kids that feel like they're being victimized, maybe we could touch base on that and discuss that a little bit. This research that he's done, it doesn't seem like a big number, but it is if you count all of us, if you count all the kids. Approximately 8% of students are victims of relentless teasing and bullying. It happens regardless of race, gender, religion, social class, physical appearance, or intelligence levels. Being a victim of constant ridicule by peers is one of the worst things that can happen to a child. If natural energy and impulses are too severely suppressed for too long, they become violent. It's natural for something that's been held under pressure to become violent in its release. A person who is too severely suppressed experiences so much pleasure in those violent releases, they're probably rare and brief. So he becomes infatuated with violence. That is was written and has been publicized on several occasions. It was written by James Douglas Morrison, the lead singer of The Doors. He was a very deep man, but he's right. And not letting off steam, we've talked about this on the show a lot, is very harmful. It's not good for your health. It's not good for your physical health and your mental health. And it certainly isn't good for the people that love you, because you either are holding everything in and don't share anything, don't discuss anything, and you become ostracized for that. And then when you finally let go, nobody knows what to do with you. Izzy's analyzation of what happens has nine things that he thinks are the most important. It destroys kids' self-confidence and self-esteem. We know that's true. Makes them think there's something terribly wrong with them. And we know that's true as well. Makes it hard to concentrate in school. Destroys their popularity as other kids are too embarrassed to be their friends. That's a sad thing, but true. Is a major factor in school phobia and truancy. Is a major cause of anxiety and depression. It can damage physical health. Victims are more prone to headaches, digestive system complaints, and to use harmful substances. Now, we've done several shows on what happens to a kid who is continuously picked on and doesn't have the ability to pull themselves out of them. They turn to chemicals. They turn to outside means to be able to bring themselves to a good place. It's a major factor in teen suicide. We know that for a fact as well. Over the past year, we've talked on many occasions, even to the mom of one of the children in the Bully Project. And he was relentlessly bullied and took his own life. And there have been several that we've discussed about hanging themselves, throwing themselves off cliffs. It's horrific. It's a major factor leading to adult social and emotional problems. It's a major factor leading to physical violence in school. Of course, that is probably the biggest overall problem, is the physical violence in school. And anybody can be a victim. Most bullying experts tell us that kids become victims because they are different in some way. It may seem that way, but this is not true. It happens because they make a simple mistake that anyone can make, and most of us do make that mistake. That's why all of us are driven crazy by at least one person in our life. Amen. We both know that to be true, right? That there's always somebody that can push our buttons. And sometimes it's apparent in the very early years. But more often than not, it's a sibling. And sibling rivalry can be intense. And, of course, you have often so many differentials in the personalities in a family. You have one kid that seems to be pretty easy to deal with. Doesn't throw themselves on the floor and kick their feet. Doesn't scream and holler when they don't get their way. And then you have the one that does. So who gets the most good attention? The kid that throws themselves on the floor and raises a ruckus, or the kid that's really good and isn't a problem? Who do you think gets the most attention?
Well, you said the most good attention. So are you qualifying it?
Oh, no. Good attention, bad attention, attention.
Okay, well, obviously the one who gets the most attention is the one with the worst behavior, because he's constantly being corrected and yelled at, and, you know, he's going to have more attention than the good kid, because the good kid is kind of taking care of his own, so to speak.
Right. So what happens to that good kid?
He starts craving attention.
Uh-huh. And do you think, I mean, I don't know, I haven't finished reading all this article. I thought we would go through it together, but I suspect from my own personal experience that eventually if you have that child who craves all the attention and does anything they can to get it, the one that doesn't get any of it starts losing some of the important assets in survival, which is self-esteem and good sense of balance with attention and being left alone, all the things that will keep them in a good place for the rest of their lives. That's often an issue for a kid who goes out there and turns into a mean kid, in some cases the bully. And I find that to be sad, because it's almost like, you know, you do what you think is right and you try to behave as a child. And instead of you reaping the rewards, we're in a family with a very, very needy child This is going on with one of the families that I've been trying to help, and we've talked about them on the show. And one child who is expressing themselves in every negative way possible because he needs the attention. But in the meantime, there's two other kids now that are like, excuse me, I live here too. And you love him more than you love us. And all of those repercussions are happening in that family. And it's sad, but I don't see a true problem solver for this. Do you? I mean, they have
I think one of the important things is that when that happens to parents, and they do have a child that is kind of monopolizing their attention, that if you're a parent of multiple children, you have to be aware of that. And you have to let the other children know, even if it's few and far between, you have to make the effort to let the other kids know that you notice them, that you see that they're accomplishing, that you see that they're well-behaved. You know, you can apologize and you can say, you know, I'm so sorry that we're kind of distracted by what your sibling is going through, but, you know, we see what you're going through. We're very proud of you. We're very appreciative that, you know, that you're not putting us through stuff like this. And, you know, as a family, we're going to get through this. So I don't know that a lot of parents do that because they're so distracted, because they get so overwhelmed. They just don't go there. But it's such a simple thing to do in order to keep the other children in an okay place. And it doesn't mean it's going to solve the problem completely, but I think it would help.
Well, I have mixed emotions about that, to be honest with you, because I think that when you're living in a kid's world, things tend to be more black and white, and I would venture to say that most other siblings with a brother or sister that's behaving that way, their tolerance becomes very low, and very often, even when a parent tries to explain, don't you love your brother? Well, I don't know if I do anymore or not. Okay. Don't you think mommy and daddy love him and we have to help him or her? And the child that's being left out often has that kind of empathy because, first of all, they're a child and they want the attention. So I think you're going to find that even if a parent tries to explain to a sibling, it goes to deaf because
I don't agree with that because I know two different scenarios where there was one child that was a special needs child where the one parent handled it exactly the way I was talking to. She had one son who was okay, and she had a daughter who was developmentally delayed, had some handicaps, and obviously required a lot of her attention. But she never allowed her son to be resentful of the sister, and he lectures about this. So she taught him at a very early age to appreciate, you know, people who are not like he is. So instead of resenting his sister, he actually appreciated her and would help the mom and never felt like he was being ignored because the mom put the effort out. He talks about his mom all the time. She always took the effort out to acknowledge him and to let him know that even though she was so distracted by the sister, that she was noticing him. And he said it made all the difference. There was another set of circumstances where the parents didn't go there, and there was, again, another special needs child. And this time it was reversed. It was a boy who was a special needs and a girl who was the a little bit older also. It was her younger brother. And the parents didn't go there and didn't really acknowledge the daughter because she was being so quiet. And she grew up to be very resentful, very overly needy for attention. It affected her interactions with other people. and even her interactions with boyfriends, because she became so needy for attention that a lot of times she would act out in ways that were not really quite appropriate. So I've seen this, and I know both these people that I'm talking about, by the way. And so I kind of saw how it played out. And it really does make a difference. Children learn how to develop their take on life by what is said and shown to them. So if you say nothing, they're left to their own devices, and that's when hurt feelings come into things like that. But if you direct a child and if you say, look, I'm so proud of you, I'm so appreciative of you, you know, please be patient, you know, with mommy and daddy or whatever. You know, if you talk to the child and you let them know you're recognizing their help or they're still being good and stuff, and you just do this on a regular basis, even if it's only once a week, it makes a huge difference in how the child progresses.
Well, but that's kind of a different scenario, and I tend to agree with everything you just said in regard to a what would be deemed a special child. That's different, and of course it all depends on the parent's handling of it when it's that. I'm talking about just somebody who's behaving like a brat. I'm not talking about somebody that I can say to you, Shelley, I need you to be nicer to your brother because, you know, this is going on and that is going on and he needs your help to be able to be a happy little boy. And bringing a sibling into that kind of an arrangement, just like when you have a 7-year-old who has been your everything and then you have another baby, how you present that new baby to this 7-year-old is imperative to how they're going to get along the rest of their lives. I mean somebody who's just a brat. You know, I mean, yes, if you dig deep enough, you're going to find some social issues for sure, because that kind of behavior is not the norm. However, there are kids that do things that are just to make sure that they've got all the attention in the world and in the room. So I would tend to agree with what you're saying, and I've seen that work as well. And I helped raise all my brothers and sisters. They were always incredibly important to me. If you'd have told me when I was 17 that I would ever have anything in my life that I loved as much as my brothers and sisters, I'd have told you were nuts. And then I had my own children. And it's
right.
Different. There's a big responsibility with your own children. But all of my siblings, as I said, well, Barbara, the one that I just saw, she and I were born fairly close together. But then it was probably 5 years before Joey was born. And then even longer, another 5 years or so when Patty was born. And Danny, in between there was another sister, but she only she didn't live past 7 months. She got spinal meningitis. But she, Danny, is only 10 months older than my oldest son. So there is a different kind of a relationship there with all of them because I felt responsible for all of them. But it still was different when I had my own children. But I'm just talking about the kid, you know, that screams the loudest when you're out to dinner or the kid that you both get a bicycle for Christmas and she likes yours better or he likes yours better and insists that mom trade the bicycles. There are kids like that out there. And I think that's what tends, even though that often isn't recognized as a big problem because a lot of families deal with that, that often turns that child in who's always getting second best into, you know, maybe not such a nice guy or girl. So I do think that those kind of things, and of course we talk about family dynamics on this show all the time, and it's imperative to have some family dynamics, to have some rules and some rights and wrongs when you're raising a bunch of kids. Otherwise, you will have one that very quietly goes about their own business and is incredibly unhappy, and they won't ever say anything.
Right. Well, so the examples I gave were for special needs, for kids that had illnesses and required more attention from the family, and that can build up resentment. You know, regardless of what the attention is over, a child is still a child, and unless they're directed a particular way, like I said, they're going to feel bad. But the analogy I gave can, oh, excuse me, it was actually an example. So the example I gave would also impact bad behavior. If one kid is constantly acting out and throwing tantrums and then, you know, and stressing the parents out and the other kid isn't, the parents should be keenly aware of the child that behaves and acknowledge it. And even if it's only once in a while that they acknowledge that child and they show appreciation to that child, first of all, if they do it in front of the child that's misbehaving and the child that's misbehaving sees some positive reinforcement going to the other child, it might make them think twice about the attention they are getting, and then it would help that child. Even it wouldn't solve the problem, and it doesn't mean that there's still not going to be some poor family dynamics going forward, but I just think it would help the situation without allowing that child to go. Because I've seen situations like this where the good child literally goes months on end with really no interaction with their own parents because they're just so exhausted from the problems from a problematic child.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I would agree with that, but I think there are two different scenarios, and I do think that a special needs child or a child that's born with a health problem or something like that, I think most families work that as a family because it's almost impossible for only one person to take care of a child that needs constant attention. And but sometimes in the real world, the only one who takes care of that child is a mom. Often the dad leaves. Often there's no siblings because dad leaves early on. There's lots of sad stories about, you know, things like that. So, but let me, so I think they are related, those two scenarios, but I think that it is different when you just have somebody that's behaving like a brat and somebody who really needs your attention. I think
the case with that, and then we'll continue on with your other point, is that the second example I gave with the young girl who had a younger brother who was special needs, because the parents were so overwhelmed by what was happening to him, they didn't really talk to the daughter, and she became a bully. She was so jealous of the extra attention that the younger brother was getting that she would bully him. So mm-hmm. it brought that anger up in her, and it wasn't until they noticed that they started addressing it. And then they realized the reason it was happening is because she was jealous for attention, and she was so little that she didn't grasp his health issues. It didn't make any sense. So she was a kid. She didn't understand the gravity of what was going on. She just knew that he was getting the lion's share of the attention, and it made her feel bad. So she lashed out by becoming a bully.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what happens. That's exactly why I brought up that point. That child goes on into school and you know, tries to get attention any way he can. And very often that manifests itself in making fun of somebody else and seeing if they can get everybody to laugh at what they're doing or form some kind of camaraderie with what they're doing. So it is a big issue, and I do think it's troublesome for parents. It isn't easy. There is no steadfast rule that helps you with scenarios like that because you just have to work through them.
Right.
So let me get to this because I like some of these things. He's got a chapter on common myths about bullying. Bullying exists because teachers tolerate it. You think that's true or false?
It's like a trick question. I'm going to say in part true.
Yeah, he says it's true too. Schools have rarely tolerated bullying among children and have always been trying to stop it. It just hasn't been routinely called bullying. Olveus, the founder of the the first sight I ever brought into the show. Remember I talked about that and how he said that there had to be more training and all that kind of stuff. He's world-renowned, and many of our bigger states have adopted his methodology in taking care of it, which means setting up training, rules, and regulations. And the first time I read it, I agreed with pretty much everything. But what Izzy taught me is the fact that the grown-ups, the rules and the regulations are not in the playground. They're not standing outside the bus. They're not in the local park. And that's where all the problems start. So there has to be a way to teach the kids how to deal with it. Yes, there needs to be better training. Yes, I talked a lot about that assistant vice principal in the movie Bully. And I said right on the air, I said, you know, that could be me. Because she just tried to placate everybody. She tried to get everybody to play nice. But she made a lot of mistakes that you could see while you were watching the movie. I'm not sure you would see them if you were that person in that moment. She thought she was doing the right things.
Right.
But more training would have been advantageous to her because she just... remember the scene where she had the two boys shake hands? Did you watch that part of it where the boys are...
Yeah, I probably watched it. In fact, I've watched it twice now.
Okay. And she makes them shake hands. And the aggressive child thinks it's funny. And he reaches out and shakes the other kid's hand, and the other kid is like, don't you get it? You know, we did that because you're standing here.
Right, right. Meanwhile, she thinks the aggressive kid is being cooperative, and the kid who's being bullied is the one being uncooperative. She had the completely wrong reaction to that. Instead of looking at the kid who was bullying and saying, well, I understand why he doesn't want to shake your hand, because I'm not so sure you're being sincere about this, you know, and calling him on it, but she didn't. She didn't even pick up on the fact that the bully wasn't being sincere.
Yeah, yeah. Well, because it was going to take care of it, in her mind, quickly and efficiently, so she could move on to the next issue. But
mm-hmm.
when you watch that, the Alveus technique seemed important. I think in real time and in real life, this needs to be meshed because I do think adults need better training. I do think schools need more talking about being nice to each other. But at the end of the day, Izzy's right. If you're going to send a kid out and not give them any ammunition, you better teach them how to turn the tables on somebody who's picking on them. So, and that's what he's all about. Just like the scenario where I said, oh, the five-year-old come up in the playground and said, oh, you stink, you smell funny. You always smell funny. And he says, what's another kid going to do with that? He's going to say, oh, you're so, and run away. But he's going to leave him alone. I mean, you know, it's just the truth. He won't pursue it because he didn't get the kind of reaction he was hoping for. And that's
right.
Awesome.
That is awesome.
And so awesome. It's just like, you know, in the workplace.
Right.
We've talked, I hate getting off topic, but I my mind is so full of so many different stories that I've seen and heard and watched in my own life that every time we talk about something like this, it always brings back a flood of memories to me on things that have happened that I've watched happen or I've been a part of. And even in the workplace, you have somebody that says to the boss, you know, Shelley, you know, she doesn't, she's never at her desk. I look for her. She never returns my calls, you know, things like that. So Shelley gets called in, and the boss says, you know, Renee is upset because, you know, she can't find you and she needs you to do this and that, and she says, you're not, you know, you're not stepping up to the plate and getting everything done. And Shelley could say, oh, that's her. she doesn't do anything right, and Shelley turns on Renee because she's pissed because Renee has gone and tattled in the workplace on Shelley. What would happen if Shelley just looked at the boss and said, well, you know, I'm sorry she didn't reach me, I didn't get her calls, but I'll go call her right now and see what's going on.
Exactly, exactly.
But right there in midstream. And then say, she does call me and say, you know, Renee, I didn't know you've been trying to get a hold of me. You know, I've been incredibly busy. I'm trying to honor everybody's wishes, but, you know, I'm sorry. What do you need, honey? And that's
it. The more you act like everything is professional and above board and no guilt, you kind of disempower any accusations that might have been brewing. But when you act with anger and almost from a standpoint of guilt, like you're trying to defend yourself, people think that you had something to defend yourself for, and you've actually just confirmed what the other person was saying about you.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
and
I actually did that to myself at a job. I never got fired until I was 53. What was it when I worked at that other company up in Stewart? And the reason was because I caught one of the upper managers lying. I called him on him, which was a big mistake on my point because I can't tolerate that. And he went on a mission to get me fired. It took him a year and a half. But the reason he finally did get me fired was because I played into his bad behavior. Instead of just doing what I would tell somebody else now, all right, I mean, I can look back retrospectively and see what I did wrong, but I played into the victim mode with this bully. If it had happened to me now with everything I've learned over the last couple of years, I never would have gotten fired because I can look back and I can see all the mistakes I made. But basically what I did is I took a victim role. And instead of taking control of the situation, because I realized what this guy was trying to do, I became very defensive. Instead of just going on about my business and not really giving any weight to what he was saying, I was going into work every day with my stomach in knots, saying, oh, my God, I don't want to deal with this guy again, which took all my power away from me. And I actually let him screw around with my circumstances to the point where he finally got me fired, which was fine because I didn't want the job anymore. But still, the bottom line is, you know, that being said, it still doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to get fired, even if you wanted to leave the position to begin with, you know. But I did it to myself. I can't even blame this guy because I played right into his bad behavior, and I compounded it for myself. So I think shows like this are so helpful because it can give people better tools to work with. And like I said, if I had known back then what I know now, it would have had a very different outcome.
Well, and I do think that the minute you fight back about something that somebody has said to you, what's that old saying? I think thou does protest too much.
Right. Yeah, because an innocent person generally stays calmer.
That's right.
Somebody who really is at fault thinks that an innocent person would act a particular way, but it's not the truth. Somebody who's innocent is like, what are you talking about? I didn't say that, you know? But generally somebody who really did say it, they start freaking out, oh, how dare you say that? Because they think an innocent person would become indignant. And most times they don't. They're just like, what are you talking about? You know, you would stay calmer. So, when you're too overbroad and you're over in your own defense, it actually makes it look like you're not being honest.
Yeah, it makes it look like you're scrambling to find an excuse for something that you did. And
right.
So there is, you know, and sometimes, you know, nobody's astute enough to even pick up on those things. It's just you that has to deal with you later. And I think that's where the most harm comes in, because you know when you behave badly. Other people often don't care whether you behave badly or not, unless they're your mother. And but the truth of the matter is, you know it. And that takes, you know, your own personal psyche takes a hit when you behave badly, especially if
you're... Well, you know, you made the you know, you say that, Izzy says, you know, to tell a young child, because you can't give them a dialogue. You can't give them, a whole script to deal with. They'll never remember it. But to teach a kid to say so is perfect, because a four-year-old can learn to say so. It's one word, you know, so, and just have that attitude. But as an adult, there was another life coach that I had seen lecture. This was a couple years ago. And he said that we're our own worst enemies by how we choose to react when people say something unkind to us. If somebody says something to you, or they criticize you, or they say, oh, you're this or you're that, and it's some sort of an insult, he said, instead of defending yourself, he said, which is ridiculous, because all you do is you just keep the whole energy going longer, right, and make yourself look bad. He said, just look at the person and say, oh, really? You have a very interesting opinion, and walk away. What are they going to do with that? You're not defending yourself. You're not railing against what they said. You're just like, oh, well, you have a very – I mean, they could call you an idiot. They could call you unethical. They could call you incompetent. Oh, you have a very interesting opinion. And then just walk away from them. You're going to leave them standing there like, what in the heck are they going to do with that now? It's sort of like the same as the so, but in adult term.
Yeah. Well, and I think that every time you – feel like you have to defend yourself, you usually feel a little bit guilty about something. So you have to explain why you did what you did. If you don't have any guilt, you know, it's much easier to look at somebody and say, oh, that's interesting that you think that, and smile, walk away.
Exactly.
You know, we do have a tendency to want to scramble out of a bad decision that we've made, because we all make them. You know, it's not like any of us are perfect. So, but the point is, you know, when somebody calls you on something like that, again, they're just trying to pick a fight. Otherwise, they wouldn't bother. Unless,
right,
like I said, unless we're talking about your mother or your spouse and they're concerned about your behavior and say something to you, maybe you do need to explain things. But when we're talking about the schoolyard or the workplace, we're not. So, You give people's comments their validity. Their comment didn't have any validity until you gave it to them.
That's
so.
Exactly right. Yep. That's a good way of putting it.
Yeah. Bullying is strictly a learned behavior. This is the truth. If this were so, bullying would be relatively easy to get rid of. Just teach kids to stop engaging in bullying, and bullying would disappear. Schools have been intensively teaching kids to stop engaging in bullying ever since the Columbine shooting. Yet bullying is being called an epidemic today by many anti-bullying advocates and organizations. The only way to truly understand bullying is by realizing that it is programmed into us from our days of life in nature. He, during the seminar, he compared human beings on the whole to the animal world, where it is survival of the fittest. And in one of the lectures I did that as well, and I did talk about survival of the fittest. And when you have a weak animal or something like that, even when a mom, a mother animal, say a mother dog even, they're domesticated, they will lay on a pup that isn't going to survive because they know it. So rather
right.
than share their energy and their resources with that pup that they know isn't going to make it, they take its life early on. And in the big animal kingdom, it's the same thing. I mean, I've watched so many of those documentaries with the gorillas and all that stuff. They are intense, and they are so much like us. I mean, watching them, it makes you laugh because you're like, oh, my God, I know families that look just like that. You know, the two teenagers over here in the corner fighting with each other. Mom's hanging on to the baby. Dad's pissed because dinner isn't ready yet. I mean, that could be any family in America. But they kill each other, and they do it for survival. because it is survival of the fittest. Well, we can't do that in the human world. I mean, we're not supposed to. We are, very sadly, but we're not supposed to. That's not an accepted mode of behavior.
Right.
But in the animal world, they do that. But on the same token, their elders are revered. Their babies are watched by the whole clan. Everybody takes care of the baby. You ever watched those, the ones with the elephants? I'm blown away by elephants. I think that things, all the animals, I mean, I like cats too and the monkeys, but the elephants seem to be so, like, they don't give a shit. Do you know what I mean? I mean, they walk around, they lumber through the jungle or wherever they are, and they just are. And yet if there's a new baby, a new calf in the elephant family, it walks in the middle of all the elephants, and all the elephants keep an eye on that child.
Right, right.
You know, so many of the things that they do, you can compare them to us and see where our shortcomings are, very sadly. Not that I want anybody to do away with a family member who they know isn't going to survive forever. That would be horrific. But the other part of the way they do things is amazing, and it should be teaching us something. Number three is bullying would never be tolerated in the adult workplace. And it shouldn't be tolerated in school either. Well, that is the truth, but there is at least as much bullying going on among adults in the workplace as there is among children in school. And you and
right.
I both know that's true.
Right, absolutely.
It is just that the adults are usually more subtle than kids. Many adults are miserable because of the way others treat them at work. Many more murders are committed by victims of bullying in the workplace than by victims of bullying in schools. According
wow.
to a 2007 Zogby International poll, 37% of American workers, an estimated 54 million people, have been bullied at work. Now,
wow.
That's a big number. Yeah.
That's a bigger number than I expected.
Well, and what does that tell us? Doesn't that tell us that no wonder we can't help the kids because we can't help ourselves?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it also shows me that because adults are just older versions of their younger selves. So when you have all these bullies and victims out there, it means they never matured out of their challenges. Their social challenges when they were younger because nobody saw it, nobody helped them through it, whatever. You know, there's so many different reasons they could have gone there. And I would venture to say that some of the bullies in adult life were the victims, just based on everything we've just discussed. And I know of one such person that I believe that to be the case with, an individual who's pretty much a bully at the position that this person holds. They're in management now, but extremely shy individual, and you can see that this individual gets kind of bullied by her two older siblings, and you see this whole dynamic. It's a family-run business. The one manager, who's a woman, gets bullied by her older brother, who's the owner of the company, and then she bullies her whole staff. She's horrible to work for, but you almost feel sorry for her because then you see the tide turn. You see how her brother treats her. She's always getting bullied by him, and then she turns around and takes it out on her staff. She's got like six people working on her, and it's like, you know, so you can see this whole dynamic happening.
Well, and very sadly, that's why a lot of families shouldn't do business together.
Yep.
I think that, Spike and I owned a bar for 2 years, and it was okay, but there were things that happened to us in those 2 years that have stayed with us, and luckily we've always been able to overcome everything, but there were things that happened when we worked together that took a toll on our relationship. So I think some people can do it, but it's usually because one of them is the strong one and one of them is the weak one. And Spike and I are both strong. So that's when you tend to butt heads if in the workplace, because you believe that you're right and they believe that they're right if you're both strong. If there is one person who's always just telling the other person what to do, then of course it works. You know.
Or one of the great ways of being successful, I was getting a little off topic, but just since the comment was made, I'll just respond to it. We both know two couples that are married people that have been in business for many years where they work together, and it's working out just fine, but they're in different areas. They're not like in their face. They each have different responsibilities, like one works at the back of the operation, one works in the front, one is out making deliveries and things like that. So even though they're in a business together, they're not like on top of each other where they would be constantly in a critical stance. The same thing with the other couple that does that works from their home. There's different areas of the house where they do services and stuff, so again, they're not on top of each other. So they're there. It's a family business. They're working together, but they're still separate, even though they're in a business together. And I've seen some of these shows on TV where it shows families that get restaurants or bars or salons or something. And that's one of the things that these people have come in to try and save the businesses, tell them, they say, you have got to find a way to separate yourself during business hours so that you're not, so you don't keep engaging the marriage dynamic, because this is a business and things have to be handled differently. And they actually go through and they teach them literally how to save their marriage first, and then because they start respecting each other and kind of distancing themselves during business hours, it ends up improving the business at the same time and giving them a little bit of space they need. You know, so it is an interesting dynamic that it can be a very, very bad idea. But like you said, if it's something that is addressed and they're not constantly on top of each other, it can be very successful. And we both know two couples that are being very successful with a family-run business.
Right, but the two couples that you're talking about are not the majority. They're the minority, and they are exceptionally in tune to each other and each other's strengths, which is imperative, because they both realize you do this better than I do, so you should do that. I do this better than you do, so I'll do that. That's the perfect world, but it's hard to achieve that. And
yep.
I think Spike and I pretty much have that as well. There are certain things that I just totally run and he has nothing to do with, and vice versa. So just in the family dynamics, you know.
Right, right.
So that is, and I agree with you about the two couples that you're talking about. They are, but I wish they weren't in the minority, but they are. We have another couple that we know that are incredibly successful, and one of them rules the roost and the other is just the picker-upper, and not quite the same kind of a dynamic as these two other couples, but they're successful. But they tend to be along the lines more of what I said, when somebody can be the boss and somebody can be the helper. And that's
mm-hmm.
their scenario. Working well for them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, yes, you know, you shouldn't throw stones, but it is a different kind of scenario.
Right.
Number four is bullies bully because they are low in self-esteem. The truth about that is true bullies, those who aren't really victims in disguise, tend to be very high in self-esteem. They really think that they're better than everybody else and that they're the most important person in the room, and that's why they bully, because they think everybody is beneath them.
Okay, now that surprises me. I would have thought it wasn't that. That surprises me. I mean, it's saying that some bullies are bullies because of low self-esteem, but the majority are not. Is that what that's saying?
They're saying that a true bully, somebody who just picks on everybody for no reason and overrides everybody, is full of self-esteem. They think they're the banana. But you also have bullies who are bullies because they're victims. And that is your biggest majority. remember the show that we did talking about the kid that comes to school? And Izzy was on the show with us that day, and I said, what if you've got a kid that comes to school and bullies everybody, and the reason he's bullying everybody is because he's got one of those situations with a really mean dad, and the dad maybe doesn't physically abuse him, but finds fault in everything he does. We see stories about this all the time on the shows you and I like to watch, and we hear reports on things like this all the time when a man is trying to get his son to buck up, you know, and be this and be that, and continually finds fault. Those kids have, you know, the snowball effect. They go
right
to school, find somebody littler, maybe younger, somebody that they can lord it over to be mean to, because that's what's happening to them in school, or I'm sorry, at home. So that is what Izzy refers to as a victim bully. And I think you're going to find, I don't know if he's got any statistics about that, but I'm going to say that probably is a much larger percentage than somebody who's just so full of themselves and self-esteem that they just think they can tell anybody anything they want to and get away with it. There are those people. You and I know some. So,
well, see, because the way I look at that, and I may be wrong, I actually want to talk to Izzy about this because I respect him, and he's got decades of research on this. But it was always my understanding or my take on the situation that somebody who has a healthy self-esteem, and maybe that's the qualifier here, but somebody who has a healthy self-esteem and feels good about themselves wouldn't be able to bully other people or be unkind to other people, because it just wouldn't be in their personality makeup. So if you have somebody that has put themselves into such a high place of lording over people, I don't think that's a healthy self-esteem. I think that's like a self-esteem that's damaged in some way. That when it's so overboard that it puts you in a position of being unkind to other people and seeing other people as peons or something like that, I don't think that's a normal self-esteem. So I'm that's the only reason why I'm not accepting this 100%. But I want to talk to Izzy about that, because I find it fascinating, and I'd like to educate myself more if I'm not looking at this properly.
I think you are. I think you are looking. I mean, but self-esteem doesn't make you a nice person or a bad person. Self-esteem is how you feel about yourself and your own talents, your own worth. So, but it doesn't necessarily make you a nice person, self-esteem. We all need to have healthy, what you just said, healthy self-esteem is a whole different story. We are almost out of time. We're down to just a little bit over a minute, and I want to wish everybody the very merriest Christmas, the happiest, whatever you're celebrating tonight and tomorrow, may it be filled with friends and family and love. And I hope that you all have a very, very blessed holiday. We will not be on the air tomorrow. We'll be back on Thursday. So I want everybody to go out there and remember to care about each other and remember to not always word. God bless everybody. Thanks, honey. Are you coming by tonight?
Probably not, but I'll give you a call in a little while and we'll talk. I'll call you probably mid-afternoon.
Okay. Perfect. Perfect.
All right, sweetheart.
God bless.
So everybody have a wonderful holiday, whatever holiday you're celebrating. And just remember to love each other, like Reen said. And remember that all the hustle and bustle and buying gifts and all that, it's exciting. But the season is really about love and family. So put that first on what you're getting out of today and tomorrow. All right? Take care, everyone, and we'll speak to you on Thursday.
Bye-bye, honey. Bye, everybody. God bless.
Bye.